Okay. So we're starting to talk about heat engines today. And here's kind of the classic heat engine. It works based on the temperature difference between the wet head. So because the head is wet, water is evaporating. And with the wet head, what happens is the same thing that happens with this boiler sort of thing. If we heat one end of this thing, the vapor pressure is higher and it's going to push the liquid up to the top. And then when the thing tips over, the liquid flows back in and we repeat the process. But it's all running because of a temperature difference between the body of the bird and the head of the bird. But before we get there, we need to talk about energy transfer. So classically, there are three ways that energy can be transferred: by conduction, by convection, and by radiation. So radiation is something we talked a little bit about before, right? We have this way of measuring temperatures. Every object that has a temperature, which is to say every object, is producing light, whether we can see it or not. So if I turn off the lights in this room, the walls are still shining, but they're shining with light that we can't see. If we were to heat up the walls in this room a little bit, you know, for example, by starting a fire,
do it.
Yeah, but that would just make them colder and we still couldn't see it. But I'm sure you've all seen these sort of toaster oven features, and I don't want to start off too rambunctious. We'll see how it works. So all that's happening when I turn this knob is I'm changing the temperature of this object. And when it's hot, you can see that it's bright and kind of orangish. And when I turn it down, it becomes a lot dimmer and maybe becomes slightly redder as opposed to orangish. So people who forge iron talk about something being cherry red, this very dark color of red where it's hot but not super hot. And it's the same thing except at even higher temperatures that make an incandescent bulb work. Right? So the only difference between this is that there's even less surface area. Can't see, huh? Same story, cool filament, it looks not very bright and it's kind of orangish red. As I increase the temperature of it, it's going to be a lot brighter and a slightly whiter color.
Mm-hmm. Can you
turn off the lights? Turn off the lights. Ooh. We could build a campfire, huh? I can't.
Can we see the toaster?
Can we see the what?
The toaster.
The toaster. Okay, well. That nice dull glow. Now if I were to aim my, let me turn on the lights. If I were to aim my little infrared, well, but I need to see. Where'd I put my little thing? Here it is. I didn't need to see, actually. It was right here. So remember that this thing registers the temperature just by the light that something's emitting. And although there isn't a lot of surface area here, It actually just says overload, so it's hotter than this thing can measure. I would have thought it could do better. So now it's reading 1,019 degrees. Whoops, for a while it was reading 1,700 degrees. But both, basically it's over the range that this thing can measure. Right, so you've seen that this does fine at 37 degrees or so. Okay, so the phenomena that we saw is that we get lots more light at higher temperatures. And in fact, the amount of light that something is going to emit depends, of course, on the surface area that's hot, and it depends on the temperature to the fourth. So small changes in temperature make huge differences in the amount of light that's being produced. So we can't see these walls not only because they're producing light that's outside of the range of human vision, but also because they're not producing a whole lot of light just because they're relatively cold. So I've left space for one of these universal constants like the Boltzmann constant. This is called the Stefan-Boltzmann constant. Stefan was the kind of major professor of Boltzmann, and together they came up with this relationship. And then there's another fudge factor called the emissivity. Emissivity. So not every object emits exactly the same. So the emissivity is a number that's between 0 and 1. A perfectly emitting body has an emissivity of 1. Something that is perfectly mirror-like turns out not to emit much light, and it would have an emissivity of 0. So commonly, objects have an emissivity that's pretty close to 1. They're pretty good emitters, with the exception of things like silvered surfaces. Now, if you have an object like, you know, like this toaster or something like this, it's producing energy, but the room is also supplying energy to it. So the output of energy is given by this formula, but the surroundings, the temperature T naught is going to be also dumping energy into it at that rate. So the net rate of energy loss due to radiation is going to be given by this difference in temperature to the fourth, the temperature of the object and the temperature of the environment. Question?
Does that
say
to the
78? No. That was the 78 degrees of the ice. Okay. So, conduction. So you know that, you know, licking a pump post when it's cold is a bad idea, whereas licking a wood railing is probably not a terrible idea, but not much fun. Right? So the difference between those materials is how conductive they are of heat. So metal will conduct a lot of, well, will remove a lot of heat from your tongue fast, and the temperature will go down fast, and you're going to have a frozen bit of human flesh. Whereas the wood isn't going to conduct that heat away nearly as fast. So the rate of energy loss due to conduction, again, depends on how much area there is in contact. And it depends on the temperature difference between one side of the material and the other. So if we're thinking about, you know, some insulated wall, and we have T2 on the outside, on the inside, let me have T1 on the inside. And T2 on the outside. There's going to be heat flow between the high temperature and the low temperature range that depends on the material. Right? If this is glass, we're going to lose a lot of heat. If this is styrofoam, we're not going to lose so much heat. So that material constant that you can look up in books is called the thermal conductivity. So I forgot the thickness of this layer. So the bigger the separation, the less temperature flow that's show F, the less heat that's going to flow between the two materials. So convection turns out to be a tricky problem. So first of all, what is convection? Is it's the process that happens automatically if there's a gravitational field. Namely, hot stuff rises and it'll be filled in by cool stuff. So if we have a typical candle flame, the way this works is the air is heated up and it rises. And so we have hot air that is coming off the top of this flame and it's sucking in cold air, and we have energy transformation by convection. So convection is getting material hot and moving it. Conduction, no material is moving, right? The walls didn't move as this heat flowed through them. In terms of radiation, it doesn't involve material at all. It's light that's flowing through space. Not necessarily light that we can see, but light nonetheless. Okay, so Stefan-Boltzmann constant is something that you can look on your last flap. The thermal conductivities of materials, there's a table in the book. And kind of no surprise here, right? The metals are highly thermally conductive, whereas, rubber has a pretty low asbestos thermal conductivity, right? We wouldn't want to be playing with asbestos. Gases have a really low thermal conductivity also. And I think we'll get around to working a homework problem where we understand how thermal panes work, where you have a layer of air that's sandwiched between two layers of glass as a way of reducing the thermal conductivity of the material. Okay, and the emissivity is something that you can also look up like in your CRC table. It's typically pretty close to 1 for most standard sorts of materials. Okay, so let's take a look at some of the problems.
Does convection have an equation?
It doesn't. So because it involves fluid mechanics and whether that motion is turbulent or not, it's generally speaking a real complicated story. So typically if people want to get a handle on convection, they would measure it in the laboratory and then put the results in a table. But there are unusual situations where you can't duplicate easily in your laboratory. So for example, the outer parts of the sun are convective, but exactly how that convective rate of transfer is something that people argue about because it's not duplicatable in the lab. More questions? Well, so this is kind of turns out to be a moderately complicated problem. Let's start with this maybe simpler problem that deals with this thermal plane of glass. So here we have two glass panes that are, and this is, I don't know if that's unusually thick for glass. Seems to me unusually thick for glass, half a centimeter thick. And we've got 1 centimeter between those two that's filled with air. And we're supposed to figure out how much heat is going to be lost if the inside of the house is at 23 and the outside is at freezing. And we're going to be assuming that we have a pane that's 1 meter square. And we're going to compare our answer to what we would get if we had just a solid piece of glass. But a 1 centimeter thick piece of glass is pretty unusual. Usually glass would be a lot thinner than that. Okay, so physical situation is we've got glass, air, and glass. And this is half a centimeter. This is 1 centimeter, and this is again half a centimeter. And we can look up the thermal conductivities of these materials. Again, nothing that you would ever even want to put on your cheat sheet. So the thermal conductivity of air is 0.0234. And the thermal conductivity of glass is 0.8. The units of thermal conductivity, if we take a look at the equation, we want to get out energy loss per second. So we want to get out joules per second. And we have meters squared for the area. We have what we're not sure about for the units of this conductivity. And then we have a change in temperature per meter. And you can see that the units need to be joules per second per meter per degree Celsius. And that's what that is showing up there.
Is there a famous dead physicist that's named for
it? So the closest famous dead physicist that is named for this is Newton. Newton has his law of cooling, which incorporates this. But no, basically there isn't a famous dead physicist named for these constants. So we're not quite set up to work this problem, right? Because we certainly know the temperature here is 23, and we certainly know the temperature is zero there. But in order to apply this formula, we need to know the temperature on each side of this material. So what is that kind of going to look like if we were to make a graph of temperature versus position? So we're going to start here at 23. The temperature is going to decrease a little bit in the glass, and it's going to decrease some in the air, decrease in this glass, and it's going to end up at 0 degrees. And we really need this change in temperature. What has to be the case if we're in equilibrium is as much heat enters this glass as leaves this glass, as enters this glass and leaves that glass. The energy has to flow through continuously. So the power per area, joules per second per square meter, has to be the same for all of these segments. And the power per area is K times the change in temperature divided by the corresponding length. And let me put little subscripts on these, because the lengths, the change in temperature, the Ks, they're all different for the different materials. So if we rearrange this equation a little bit, we're going to have the power per area times the thermal conductivity times the length. That's going to be the change in temperature for this segment. And we can do the same thing for that segment. And we can do the same thing for that segment. So if we add up the length, the power, the area, the thermal conductivity, we're going to get what you would get if you added up all of those changes in temperature. And I don't know what this temperature is, but I know that if I add up all of these temperature changes, I have to get the 23 degrees minus the 0 degrees. Okay. Well, so we can go ahead and do that, because what we're interested in is this power per area. So what we've got then is the power per area. We want to add up the thicknesses divided by the thermal conductivity, and we're going to get the 23 degrees that is the overall temperature change. So the power per area is going to be the 23 degrees divided by the sum of all of those lengths divided by the thermal conductivity. So this quantity, length divided by thermal conductivity, it's a handy quantity to have, and it's usually called the R factor. So if you buy insulation at your Fleet and Farm, what you're going to find is R factors listed for that insulation. Unfortunately, it's going to be listed in really crazy units, right? Because they're going to use BTUs for energy, and they're going to use feet for the lengths, and they're going to use degrees Fahrenheit. So, yes, we can do this calculation of the R factor for our insulation, but don't expect that number to match what it is at Fleet Farm, because they're using English units. Okay, so let's finish the problem. So the problem then the power that's going to go through this window is the area, and they tell us that that's 1 square meter. And then the total change in temperature, we never bothered to figure out what the temperature differences were at the various pieces, divided by, add up the lengths divided by the thermal conductivity. So I have 0.5 centimeter divided by the thermal conductivity of glass, which was 0.8. And I have 1 centimeter of air, which was 0.023. And then I have another layer of glass at 0.8. And this is going to give me the power that's going through, the joules per second, or watts, that are going to be going through that window. Okay, so we've got 0.005 divided by 0.8. And that's happening twice, so I might as well just multiply it by 2. And got 0.01, 0.0234. So I'm getting for the numerator here 0.4, basically 0.44. And I'm getting for my final answer basically 52.3 joules per second, which are watts. Okay, so 50 watts of power are going to be going through that window. That's probably not a really great estimate because the air that's right next to this window is probably not at room temperature. If you ever put your hand near a window, you know that this air is going to be colder than room temperature air. So there typically are little air layers that we really should account for that are not wedged, but are kind of part of the way the thing works. Some extra layer on the inside and outside. And of course, it'd be hard to give an equation for that layer because it depends on how windy it is, right? If it's very windy, that layer is going to be erased and you're going to have extra heat loss through that window. Okay, so how about if it's glass? Well, that's even easier, right? If it's a solid piece of glass, then we have temperature change of 23 degrees over a length that is 1 centimeter, and we're supposed to multiply that by the thermal conductivity of glass. And we know that the area is 1 square meter nicely, so we've got 23 and 0.01 divided by it and 0.8 times that. And what we get is 1.84 kilowatts. So hugely more energy is going to leak out through a solid glass pane than from one of these panes that has a layer of air separating the two pieces. Okay, questions? Let's take a look at a thermal conductivity problem where we do have to figure out what the temperature change is at these two spots. So here we have some gold, and here we have some silver, metals that are highly conductive, and here we've got 80 degrees Celsius and 30 degrees Celsius, and these are equal lengths, and we're supposed to figure out what the temperature is at the midpoint. You may be surprised that they didn't tell us any of the dimensions. But if you think about it, I think you can see that the dimensions don't matter, right? If it's very long, that same temperature difference is just going to be spread over a much larger piece of length. And if we make it fatter, there's just going to be more heat flowing through it, but the same temperature difference on either side. Okay, so no dimensions. But we have a piece that has split evenly. So we've got L here and L here. None of these things do we know. What we know is that we've got 80 degrees at the top, 30 degrees at the bottom. This is gold, and this is gold, and this is silver. And the thermal conductivity of these guys, silver has a thermal conductivity of 427. And the gold has a thermal conductivity of 314. Now, once this thing reaches equilibrium, the same amount of heat has to flow through every cross-sectional area of that. So the amount of heat that flows through the copper has to be exactly the same as the amount of heat that's going to flow through the silver. So how much heat is going to flow through the silver? Well, it depends on the temperature of this junction. But what it's going to be is the area times the thermal conductivity of the gold times the temperature difference, which is 80 degrees minus T. And we need to divide that by the length. That same amount of heat has to flow through the silver. And that has one end at T and the other end at 30 degrees. And you can see that these things that they didn't tell us all cancel out. And if I distribute this K out, I'm going to have the thermal conductivity of gold times 80 minus the thermal conductivity of gold times T. That has to be the thermal conductivity of silver times T minus the thermal conductivity of silver times 30. If I put the negative stuff on one side of the equation, basically flip sides for these guys, what I'm going to have is the thermal conductivity of gold times 80 plus the thermal conductivity of the silver times 30. That has to be equal to thermal conductivity of the silver plus the thermal conductivity of the gold all times T. So finally, of course, we can divide through and get our formula for the temperature. We're going to have the thermal conductivity of gold times 80 plus the thermal conductivity of silver times 30, all divided by the sum of those thermal conductivities. And we got those numbers, so we're all set. So we've got gold as, so before we come up with an answer, the middle temperature is what? 60 degrees, right? No, 55 degrees. Is the temperature at T more or less than that middle temperature? What do you think? It's going to be less because it's going to need a bigger temperature difference in order to drive heat through the through the gold than it is through the silver. Does that make sense? Because this is more conductive. Is that good? Okay, so we can plug and chug. What we've got is the 314 times 80 and the 427 times 30 divided by the 314 plus the 427. Okay, 314 times 80 and the 427 times 30. And then we got the 314 and the 427. And what we got is 51.2 degrees.
Where did the T minus 55 come from?
Oh, it didn't come from any place. So I was saying, without thinking about it, what sort of temperature do we expect here? So we kind of expect something in between, and exact in between would be 55. So if these materials were exactly the same, then it would be at 55. But thinking about it, since this is more conductive, the temperature is going to be less than that midpoint here. So I was just saying you can kind of ballpark your answer without actually doing the calculation, and then you can check to see whether it makes sense or not. More questions? So kind of back to the same thing. In this drawing I made, I tried to get things right. What we have is the thermal conductivity times the slope. That has to be a constant. So if we have a Yeah, I didn't do it right. Thank you. Yeah, so it should be small here and big here. Yes, makes much more sense that way. So what we have is the thermal conductivity times the slope being a constant, because the same amount of heat is going to be going through. So if we have a big thermal conductivity like we do for the glass, we have to have a correspondingly small slope. Relatively smaller temperature difference is required here in order to have the same amount of heat flow through there as flow through there. So this is an interesting but I think too long problem for us. Let's take a look at 54. So you're naked and you've got 1.5 square meters of your skin, and your skin is not at 37 degrees, right? Body, that's, you have to be a little bit inside your body before you get to 37 degrees. So they're saying 33 degrees. And you're in a room that's at 20 degrees, which is pretty close to room temperature. And we've got an emissivity of 0.95. Remember I said that typically emissivities are going to be 1 or close to it, except for things like mirrors. What's the rate of energy that's being radiated by the body? Okay, so it's pretty much just a plug and chug, right? We've got the emissivity, 0.95. We've got the area that is 1.5 square meters. If we look in the back of the book, we can find out what the Stefan Boltzmann constant is, second from the bottom, 5.67 times 10 to the minus 8th. The skin, which is the thing that is emitting, is at 33. So I plug in 33 here, right? No, right? Absolute temperature for pretty much everything. So 273 plus 33 to the fourth minus 273 plus 20 to the fourth. Well, you know, 273 plus 33, that's going to be 316. This doesn't sound all that different from 293, right? Hardly any difference at all. So those things shouldn't add up to much of anything at all. Wrong. Okay, so we got 0.95. We've got 1.5. We got this small number for the Stefan Boltzmann constant. And then we've got something to the fourth power. And fourth powers are going to make big numbers fast. So I don't know, that first number to the fourth I have is basically 10 to the 10th. And what I get is basically 221 watts. Yeah, I got 213. And I see where my mistake was. So your typical metabolism is something more like 50 watts. So you have to kind of kick up the furnace if you're going to be nude in a 20-degree room. Well, let's take a shot at 46. So this is something that we kind of actually do in the energy course lab, is we make styrofoam boxes and we that are kind of modeling houses, and we can put temperature on the inside and the outside, and we can figure out what the thermoconductivity of the house is. But in this particular case, we're actually talking about something like a beer case, right? What we're going to do is we've got styrofoam box, and 5 kilograms of ice are going to take 8 hours to melt, and we're supposed to figure out what the corresponding thermal conductivity is of styrofoam. So how much heat is going to be released and disappear through the styrofoam container if we have 5 kilograms of ice melting in 8 hours? So we know that 1 kilogram of ice produces the 3.3 times 10 to the fifth joules. So what we've got in terms of energy is going to be the 5 kilograms times the latent heat of fusion of the ice. And this is happening over a time that is 8 hours. 3,600 seconds in an hour. So this is going to be the joules per second that wants to go into our equation for the power that's dissipated, right? Which is the area times the thermal conductivity times the difference in temperature divided by the thickness. Okay, so 3.33 inner exponent 5, all of that times the 5 kilograms, 8 hours, 3600 seconds, and the answer is kind of surprising. This is 57, more like 58 watts. So they tell us what the area is. It's 0.8 square meters. We've got the temperature difference, 5 on the inside and 25 on the outside, so the temperature difference is 20. And the thickness of the styrofoam is 0.02 meters. So if we plug and chug a little bit, what we've got is the 58 watts divided by the 0.8 meters divided by the change in temperature, that's 20 degrees, times the thickness, that's going to be the thermal conductivity of styrofoam. So 0.02 times it, 0.8 dividing it, and the 20 degree temperature difference dividing it, and I get 0.07.
Why do we have to convert to Kelvin for that equation?
Do we have to convert to
Kelvin? Or is it just that Stefan's law?
Yeah, so it's just, so temperature differences, it doesn't matter whether we use Kelvin or Celsius. So we could have worked all of these problems in Kelvin if we wanted to. But for Stefan-Boltzmann law, we have to have absolute temperature. So temperature differences, it's the same whether we're doing it in Kelvin or Celsius. Well, I don't think we have, this is actually a red question, so I don't think we have time to finish it, but let's at least talk about it. So the idea is we're trying to figure out what R value we need for insulation if we're planning on heating our house with a wood stove. The wood stove has these dimensions, it's a cylinder, so they tell us in a complicated way what the area is, and they've told us what the temperature is, unfortunately in degrees Fahrenheit. and we want to keep the room at 70 degrees. So we know, we can figure out from the Stefan-Boltzmann law how much heat is being produced by this stove. Now the heat is going to leak out through the walls, and they tell us the dimensions of the house, so we can figure out what the surface area of the house is. And they ask us what R value do we want for the insulation of our house, given that it's going to be 32 degrees on the outside and it's going to be 70 degrees on the inside. Now for this particular problem, it's kind of not too bad that they gave us things in English units, because they actually want an R value that would match what you would find in Fleet Farm. So we actually want to get this thing in BTUs per hour, per square feet, per degree Fahrenheit. So we're going to have to do the conversion to Celsius, well, actually to Kelvin, in order to use the Stefan-Boltzmann law to get the power output. But then in order to get the heat flow, we might as well stick with the degrees Fahrenheit and square feet in order to get the actual R factor. Okay, questions?